Ladies and gentlemen, the Vice President of the United States and Mrs. Bush. Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States and Mrs. Reagan.
Welcome to our 97th anniversary gridiron dinner. Mr. President, just to put your mind at ease, none of the food served tonight was purchased with food stamps. Only the wine. It's been a remarkable year since the last time we met in this room. Supply side economics has taken over. If you're on the right side, you will get supply. The president says, give his plan a chance to work. The Democrats say, hell, it's already worked. Nonetheless, prosperity is just around the corner. You can hear it trickling down. This is an election year. Out in California, they call it sibling rivalry. The Republicans boast they're going to win control of the House. The Democrats predict a landslide for their ticket. Both parties are counting their turkeys before their hats. There's trouble in Latin America. President Reagan says no U.S. troops will go into combat abroad. Whenever a president says that, it's time to check with your draft board. But the Soviets are having their troubles, too. For instance, Russia's collective farms have produced another bumper crop of Kansas wheat. Still, there's hope for us yet. Now we've got a woman on the Supreme Court. The other eight justices have just reaffirmed their landmark decision in Baker versus Carr 368 U.S. 186. One woman, one vote. Mr. President, we all thank God you're with us to share this evening and for your safe passage through the valley of the shadow. Now let us relax in the friendly glow of the gridiron. The gridiron may singe, but it never burns. The Gridiron Club has but one rule. Ladies are always present. Reporters are never present. Please be seated. Well done. Mr. Charles R. McDowell, Jr., the Vice President of the Gridiron Club.
Mr. President, in the 98 years of these gridiron leaders, we figure we've been involved with more than 19,000 American politicians. Think of it. But, Mr. President, our long experience in Washington also has a bright side. Since the days of John Philip Sousa, this club has been associated with the United States Marine Band. Its director is our music director and friend, Lieutenant Colonel John R. Bourgeois. So, Mr. President, we will begin this evening with the best we've got, the President's own U.S. Marine Band. Thank you.
Mr. President.
Mr. Alan S. Emery, Chairman of the Music Committee of the Gridiron Club.
Mr. President, I hadn't expected this, but I guess I'm going to get the biggest hand of the evening on an ad-lib line. The final score of the Georgetown-Louisville basketball game was Georgetown 50, Louisville 46. Thank you, sports fans. Mr. President, as you well know, and as President Reagan well knows, there's a lot of showbiz in politics, and a lot of politics in showbiz. Politicians act like clowns. They juggle facts and figures. They dance around the issues. And that's what our show is about. And it is true that quite a few of our entertainers here tonight are left over from previous administrations. But they're pretty darn good. And the reason we know that is that Mrs. Reagan leaked the word to the president, who leaked it to Dave Gergen and Larry Speaks, who leaked it to Attorney General Smith, who leaked it to Cap Weinberger, and now it's all over town. So we're going to stick to our game plan, Mr. President, and it's better than balanced budgets, cutting taxes, or big defenses. It's entertainment. That's what it is, and that's what we've got up here for you tonight. So let the gridiron soloists, dancers, and chorus do their thing. It's showtime, folks.
Now's the time for a pun and a rhyme. It's entertainment.
We're set with our own safety net. We want leaks from our friend Larry Speaks while we sob. Taxes go down and up. That's entertainment.
They bust antitrust with the greatest of glee. No grief for the chief of the AT&T. An IRS, you can see, looks for white folks' redemption by granting a tax exemption.
The rich
finally found their niche, but the poor don't quite see the allure. Ketchup, please, does it go with free cheese? The world is on stage. Our stage is a world of
state, make a plea for a new subsidy, spend it all, winter, summer, or fall, that's entertainment.
You dine on good food and good wine while you drink, budget pile up pretty, well, it's all night and it's whole, it's entertainment.
The fun can be done. A needle or two. The song won't go wrong if it's sung by our crew. And when our show is all through, you can laugh and be hearty, regardless of your own party.
Aren't you
got her clue from the news from the start. It comes straight from the heart. We will play it the gridiron way. The world is our stage. Our stage is a world of entertainment.
Mr. President.
Mr. Edward W. O'Brien, the immediate past president of the Gridiron Club.
Would the following guests please rise and remain standing for a moment? Mr. Frankie Russell, president of Central Newspapers Incorporated, publishers of the Indianapolis Star, the Arizona Republic of Phoenix, and other newspapers. Mr. Lawrence S. Connor, managing editor of the Indianapolis Star. And the wife of our incoming president, Mrs. Benjamin R. Cole, known to us as Miss Alice. Ladies and gentlemen, we're delighted that you are here tonight to join us in celebrating the inauguration of our president for 1982, Mr. Benjamin R. Cole, Washington correspondent of the Indianapolis Star and of the Phoenix Republic. Mr. Cole is a total Hoosier, born in Indiana, raised in that state, nurtured in its traditions. When he was 16 years of age, he faced the same decision as all other Indiana lads. Should he become a newspaper man or should he become a basketball player? Young Ben was only 5'3" at that time, and he was determined to be a millionaire. So it was an easy choice. He became a newspaper man. It happens that today is the 38th anniversary of the start of his distinguished career on the Indianapolis Star. He has graced our profession, and in recent years, he has graced the Gridiron Club. There will be times when he presides over this organization during the year when he will have to make clear who's boss. We always equip our president with a symbol of his authority. That symbol is the ivory gavel that was given to the Gridiron Club back in 1902 by Mark Hanna. The gavel will now be entrusted to Mr. Cole for this one term by a former president, Mr. Edgar Allan Poe. And as the presentation takes place, we're going to recall for a moment one of Mr. Cole's creative masterpieces from a Gridiron show of just a few years ago. Back in that happy time when prices down on the farm were as high as the sky.
Round and round. inflation spiral keeps turning, and a bag of groceries costs more every day. You may never taste that steak for which you're yearning. Inflation's gone and phased it all away. For everything you buy, you gotta pay more. And for everything you sell, you're getting less. The rich are getting richer and vice versa. The economy is really in a mess. But the price of corn is high along the Wabash, and old Agribiz is really making hay. Through the sycamores, the Cadillacs are gleaming, and the bankers on the Wabash shout, hooray!
Thank you, Rudy Kaufman, for that trip down memory lane. Thank you, Mr. Poe, for your presentation of this treasure of the Gridiron Club. I assure you, I shall wield it gently.
Mr. President,
Mr. Edgar Allan Poe, the chairman of the Initiation Committee of the Gridiron Club.
Mr. President, the Gridiron Club blossomed forth in 1885 in the first administration of President Grover Cleveland. Since then, the club has elected 359 members. Five new members have been elected since our last spring dinner a year ago. I now have the honor of presenting them in the order of their election. First, Mr. Warren Weaver of the New York Times. Mr. B.J. Cutler, the Scripps Howard newspaper. Mr. Arthur Wiese, the Houston Post. Mr. Raymond Coffey of the Chicago Tribune. And Mr. Hedrick L. Smith of the New York Times. Mr. President, the Gridiron Class of 1982.
Welcome, gentlemen, and now you may retire to the back row of the chorus, ne'er to be heard of for 10 or 15 years. Mr. Lucien C. Warren, the Secretary of the Gridiron Club, and Mr. Alan W. Crumley, the Treasurer of the Gridiron Club.
Will the following gentlemen please rise and remain standing for a moment? Vice President George Bush. Chairman Chairman Murray Weidenbaum of the Council of Economic Advisors. Chairman Paul Volcker of the Federal Reserve Board. Chairman Jack Kemp of the House Republican Conference. And a fellow who says he's the director of OMB, David Stockman.
Professor Bush says the others have all flunked his course in voodoo economics. Thank you. You may be seated.
I know it. I can see it coming.
Commerce Secretary Malcolm Baldrige. Will he stand, please? He's better known as a rodeo performer. Treasury Secretary Donald Regan. He used to be chairman of Merrill Lynch and Company. You know, you've seen their commercials.
Yes, and the people on Wall Street are saying they ought to update those commercials with a bear walking through that china shop. Now, four favorites of President Reagan. Labor Secretary Raymond Donovan. Douglas Fraser of the UAW. Robert Georgine of the AFL-CIO Building and Construction Trades Department. And Gerald McEntee of the State, County, and Municipal Employees Union.
Alan, how do you know that they're favorites of President Reagan?
Well, they're placed at the head of the line when they visit the White House, the tourist line, that is. And now three top wheels of the U.S. auto industry. Ford Chairman Philip Caldwell. Chrysler Vice Chairman Gerald Greenwald. And General Motors Vice Chairman Howard Carroll.
Ford and Chrysler may not be selling as many cars these days, but they can show General Motors a thing or two, especially when it comes to production of previously owned, clean, spiffy tax credits. Transportation Secretary Drew Lewis.
This is the man the president is depending on to get the country back on its feet. So far he's fired 11,000 air traffic controllers, shut down half of Amtrak, and wants to add 10 cents a gallon to the gasoline tax. Ann Gorsuch, head of the Environmental and Protection Agency.
She's following President Reagan's program of getting the country back to basics. She works with three basics: fire, air, and water. Fire the staff, and the air and the water will take care of themselves. And now, Richard Williamson of the White House, principal salesman of President Reagan's new federalism program.
Mr. Williamson has requested us to tell the eight governors here tonight But when they leave the hall, he will be at yonder door to pass out their federal programs. Sorry, governors, it's the only exit. William H. Webster, Director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
Now, he's the first FBI director to replace the snap brim hat with a burnoose. And now, burnoose. And now, four White House press secretaries. Communications Director David Gergen. Deputy Press Secretary Larry Speaks. Vice Presidential Press Secretary Peter Thiele. And the First Lady's Press Secretary, Sheila Patton Tate.
I recently queried Larry Speaks on how many press secretaries it takes to change a light bulb.
And what did he say?
He said, "I'll have to get back to you on that." Chairman Strom Thurmond of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Benjamin Hooks of the NAACP. President John Jacob of the National Urban League. His predecessor, Vernon Jordan. And D.C. Delegate Walter Fauntroy.
Well, anyway, these last four gentlemen have asked Senator Thurmond whether he will join the 65 senators who are co-sponsoring the House passed Voting Rights Extension Act.
And what did he say, Lucian?
He said, "I'll have to get back to you on that." Robert Dole, Chairman of the Senate Finance Committee. And Elizabeth Dole, Assistant to the President for Public Liaison.
They say Mrs. Dole is the most effective lobbyist that any White House ever sent to the Senate Finance Committee. And now, a man who says he can't make ends meet on $60,000 a year, the Deputy White House Chief of Staff, Mike Deaver.
Mr. Deaver, we'd like to introduce some people who seem to have found a way. Roger Mudd. Jane Pauley. Frank Reynolds. ABC President Roon Arledge. And NBC President Reuven Frank. And now, in appropriate sequence, Commissioner Roscoe L. Egger, Jr. of the Internal Revenue Service.
Mr. Egger would like to meet these famous people. Immediately after the dinner, upstairs, room 1040. Secretary Richard Schweiker of Health and Human Services. His predecessor, Joe Califano.
Now, Jesse Helms regards Richard Schweiker as nothing but a closet Califano. Doonesbury cartoonist Gary Trudeau. And CIA Director William Casey.
These are strange and wondrous times. Mr. Trudeau makes up something perfectly outrageous in Doonesbury about what the CIA has done, and a few days later, Mr. Casey does it.
And now last, ladies and gentlemen, and possibly least, Mr. Marvin Thornberry. You don't have to be told that he is the former butter-fingered first baseman of the New York Mets, and he's now a familiar figure on television.
Mr. I don't know why they asked me to come to this thing. I knew this was a bad idea.
President.
Mr. Robert Novak, a member of the Music Committee of the Gridiron Club.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is my honor to announce some very special guests at the head table. It is again our privilege to greet the First Lady, Mrs. Reagan. Also our privilege to greet Mrs. Bush. Here tonight are 10 distinguished representatives of foreign countries. Will they please rise and remain standing? The Ambassador of the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. The Ambassador of Tanzania. The Ambassador of Egypt. The Ambassador of Sweden. The Ambassador of Canada. The Ambassador of France. The Ambassador of Israel. The Ambassador of the People's Republic of China. The Ambassador of Saudi Arabia. The Ambassador of Great Britain. And in addition, the United States representative to the United Nations.
may be seated.
We are also honored tonight by the presence of four distinguished members of the Supreme Court. Will they also remain standing after they have been introduced? Justice Brennan. Justice Blackmun. Justice Powell. And Justice O'Connor. Thank you. Please be seated. Also present tonight are these distinguished guests. Again, please remain standing after you have been introduced. Governor Robert Orr of Indiana. John Marsh, Secretary of the Army. John Lehman, Secretary of the Navy. General Lew Allen, Chief of Staff of the U.S. Air Force. Representative Robert Michael of Illinois, Minority Leader of the House. Representative Thomas Foley of Washington, Majority Whip of the House. Senator Ted Stevens of Alaska, Assistant Majority Leader of the Senate. Senator John Tower of Texas, Chairman of the Senate Republican Policy Committee. Richard Richards, Chairman of the Republican National Committee. And we are especially glad to have with us two friends who this past year have thrilled us with their courage. Assistant to the President and Press Secretary, James Brady and Mrs. Brady.
President.
Mr. David Broder, the producer of the Democratic skit.
Mr. President, would the following gentlemen please rise and remain standing for just a moment? The chairman of the Democratic National Committee, Mr. Charles T. Manatt. Senior Senator from Ohio, John Glenn. The retiring chairman of the House Rules Committee, Representative Richard Bowling of Missouri. Mr. President, the advisor to presidents and sage of the Georgetown party circuit, attending his 37th gridiron dinner, Mr. Clark Clifford. Thank you, gentlemen. Mr. President, after that big fanfare and buildup, I am embarrassed to have to tell you that there will be no Democratic skit this year. We can't cast it. There's hardly anybody left in town who admits to being a Democrat. All we've got around here now are Republicans, neoliberals, neoconservatives, and boll weevils. The last time there were any Democrats here was in January when they celebrated the 100th anniversary of the birth of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. There were Democrats there, Mr. President, but somebody took names. And since then, they've almost all been riffed. We've asked a quartet to come back here this evening, a quartet that sang on that occasion, and to give you and your guests the same report on the sad state of the Democratic Party that they gave to Franklin D. Roosevelt's spirit that day. Mr. President, here is the Democrats' final report.
To the statesmen of our party, to our Speaker Tip O'Neill, to the other giants whom we love so well, sing we Democrats assemble on the outside looking in, for our days of bygone glory lost their spell. Only yesterday, remember, we were inside looking out, and we didn't know that we were so well off. For we should have learned the lesson when it comes to living high. There is nothing better than the public trough. From the White House you bequeathed us fireside chats remembered well. Gave us NRA and TVA and all. Something's missing since you left us, and our party's lost its spell. Please, O Prince of Politicians, hear our call. For the magic of big spending and the joy of being taxed, there is somehow now lessening demand, and the way to win elections is to woo the well-to-do and announce that Calvin Coolidge holds command. We are poor Democrats, short of heart and brains, so gone with you.
gentlemen. Mr. President, that concludes the Democratic skit. On with the dinner.
Wait a minute! Wait a minute! I have found their hideout in South Succotash.
Are you sure?
Come with me.
This is Tip O'Neill's Last Chance Saloon. Chuck Manath, the manager, speaking. Oh, hello there, Mrs. O'Neill. No, he ain't here right now. He's out with some of the boys. But I'll be sure and tell him. Yes, I will.
Chuck Manath, didn't you used to be a big shot in the Democratic Party chairman or something?
What are you doing in a dump like this?
When I was young, I worked for free as mighty chairman of the DNC. Me bank and me law firm, it made me rich. But for famous friends in Congress, I had such an itch.
But for famous friends in Congress, I had such an itch.
I made those friends so very soon, and thanks to them, I'm slaving in O'Neill's saloon.
He made those friends so very soon, and thanks to them, he's slaving in O'Neill's saloon.
There's Jimmy Jones and Russell Long, Dan Rouston, Kowski, and Jim Wright. Wrong. They swore that with their strategy, I'd become the biggest chairman here since Jim Farley.
He'd become the biggest chairman here since Jim Farley.
That strategy was such a boon that now I'm swabbing glasses in O'Neill's saloon.
That strategy was such a boon that now he's swabbing glasses in O'Neill's saloon.
Oompa, oompa, oompa. Their taxing bill and their budget plan was even dumber than Republicans. They lost on them, and it cost me too. I can surely recommend them for a wrecking crew.
You can surely recommend them for a wrecking crew.
If they offer you help, better fly to the moon, or you'll end up sweeping floors in Tip O'Neill's saloon.
Yeah, if they offer you help, better fly to the moon, or you'll end up sweeping floors in Tip O'Neill's saloon.
Well, as you can see, we're in a rather de classe drinking establishment where these derelict Democrats come to drown their sorrows. I am advised that several low types intend to show up, so some of you ladies and gentlemen may wish to leave now. Otherwise, we'll let them proceed.
Hey, we ain't as bad as all that.
No, we got some terrific horses for 84.
I got the candidate who's known in every state, 'cause all the Kennedys think he's rally great. Can do, can do. Our Ted says he'll follow through if Mudd doesn't interview. Can do, can do.
I got Fritz Mondale here. His style is real sincere. He's got the Carter charm, not the Billy fear. Good chance, good chance. The liberals adore his stance. If Fritz has the will to dance, good chance, good chance.
Now just a minute, men, let's not forget John Glenn, 'cause he's a spaceman hero from way back when. Okay, okay, he'd carry the Milky Way if Glenn has the style to stay. Okay, okay.
I got the candidate who's known in every state, 'cause all the Kennedys think he's rally great.
I got Fritz Mondale here. His style is real sincere. He's got the Carter charm, not the Billy Beer.
Now just a minute, men, let's not forget John Glenn, 'cause he's a spaceman hero from way back when.
Teddy K.
Fearless Fritz.
Spaceman Glenn.
We got the guys right here.
they may take their advice from touts, Mr. President, but you and I would await the judgment of the oldest and wisest Democrat of them all, who strays into this bar a long way from Pamela Harriman's salon.
My God, it's Clark Clifford.
Now, this is a man who knows that the slower he walks or talks, the more the client pays.
He's punched a few tickets in his day. He ought to be able to tell us how to put together our ticket.
You take the brains of Teddy Kennedy. You take the hair of Spaceman Glenn.
Old skinhead Glenn.
You take the courage of Fritz Mondale, who somehow always lives to fight.
He'll fight again.
And then you stick them all together with the glue of old Askew. And you will lose more states with that magic slate than you did in 52. You take the wise old head of Gary Hart, the oily honesty of Strauss.
Oh, wily Strauss.
You take the genes of Adlai Stevenson and Ed J. Rockefeller
and his lovely spouse.
And then you stick them all together by the light of Moonland Rule. And you will lose more states with that candidate than you did in 72. You take, you carry for his auburn hair, and Alan Cranston for his smile.
Never smile.
And then you throw in Jimmy Carter for his sophisticated style.
Love his style.
And then you stick them all together and reassure the wimp he's great. And you will fight, fight, fight till election night. And you'll pray for 88. And then you'll stick them all together and reassure the wimp he's great. And then you'll fight, fight, fight for election night. And you'll pray for 88.
Mr. President, your California guests will have noticed a conspicuous omission. I say there was a conspicuous omission in that body count of Democratic presidential hopefuls. And even these dull-witted types think it strange.
Yeah, how come he didn't even mention Jerry Brown?
Hey, haven't you heard? Jerry Brown got bit, right here. I switched from priest to politics when Ron beat Dad in 66. My Senate hopes were riding high till bitten by the old med fly. Governor Brown, the flakes adore. Senator Brown, the next great score. President Brown in 88.
juniors, not too deep. No Maureen Regan could defy the man who licked the old med fly.
Governor Brown, the place adore. Senator Brown, the next great score. President Brown,
the Moonbeam nominee. I'm famous all around the bay for saving fruits from toxic spray. All enemies I'll sterilize, for who can swat the Lord of Flies?
Governor Brown, the face of war. Senator Brown, the next great score. President Brown,
there ain't no flies on me.
Populist element in this saloon has been growing restless, and they demand that the people be heard. Two ragamuffins now step forward, and in the fashion of the undeserving poor, proceed to bite the hand that feeds them.
Every little breeze seems to whisper free cheese.
Camembert, please, cause the blue you can't squeeze.
Eat 'em in cheddar, taste even better.
Goody,
goody.
Watch how much you eat, cause the portions are small. Gee, what a treat, beats not eating at all.
Each 5-pound block sinks like a rock.
We love all that cheese.
Just to wave the handouts brings joy we never knew.
Still today the standout thrills us through and through. When you're on your knees, they will send you free cheese.
Gouda or brie, just be sure you say please.
It's all for us, that great big surplus.
We love all the cheese.
When you're on your knees, they will send you free cheese.
Gouda or brie,
just be sure you say please.
It's all for us, that great big surplus.
We love all the cheese.
Gratitude. These Democrats really are a duplicitous lot. Fortunately, they'd rather betray each other than anybody else. Now, here are three treacherous fellows. Fickle Phil Graham. Cunning Kent Hance. And the third of the boll weevils, Sneaky Sonny Montgomery.
You sure that is Sonny Montgomery? Boy, there damn well is a new self.
I'm a loyal Democrat who knows where the power's at. But if dealings, Reagan's dealing fat, then deal I may. But I'm always true to you, Tippo, in my fashion. Yes, I'm always true to the party in my way. At the White House, I may dine on the finest vintage wine. If the wine makes me supine, my votes may stray. But I'm always true to you, Tippo, in my fashion.
Yes, I'm always true to the party in my way.
On a short Camp David hitch, I inhale the Reagan pitch. If that hearty pitch means a party switch, okay. But I'm always true to you, Tipple, in my fashion. Yes, I'm always true to the party in my way.
All my Mississippi kin would most surely do me in if your liberal discipline I should obey. But I'm always true to you Yankees in my fashion. Yes, I'm always true to you in my southern way.
Mrs. Baker, Deaver Meese, think our help will never cease. But our votes could cease if his polls decrease, I'll say. But we're always true to you Yankees in our fashion.
Yes, we're always true to you in our southern way.
Preservation, that's the scheme of our bull weevil regime. Though our weevil scheme brings your evil team dismay. But we're always Democrats in our weevil fashion.
Yes, we're always Democrats in our weevil way.
The disloyalty of the Southern Democrats is matched by the disarray among the big city bosses. There's a Democratic mayor up in New York City named Ed Koch, who is so confused that he doesn't know from one election to the next if he's a Democrat, a Republican, or a Playboy bunny.
How am I doing?
You were doing fine until you opened your big mouth. But now you're headed for trouble.
Well, we got trouble, my friend. Right here, I say trouble in everybody's city. Why, sure, I'm a big town mayor, certainly mighty proud to say. I'm always mighty proud to say it. I consider that the hours I spent down in Old City Hall are golden. Help me care for the grassroots and the tax rolls and the big banks. But lately, folks, the Congress and the states have been frittering away. I say all those guys have been frittering. Frittering away the gas tax, income tax, sales tax, too. So they get reelected, never mind keeping city parks clean or the slums walled off or the streetcars running. Never mind raising any taxes till the mayor is caught with his budget dragging in election year. And that's trouble. Oh, yes, we got lots and lots of trouble. I'm thinking about the clerks with their overtime, cops and carters piling up the garbage, yelling for a strike. We got trouble. Folks in everybody's city. Trouble with a capital T, and that rhymes with D, and that stands for dough. Now, I know all you folks are inflamed taxpayers. I'm going to be perfectly frank. Would you like to know the kind of conversation goes on with officials at City Hall? We'll be paying for welfare, paying for highways, paying for Medicaid like drunk New Dealers. With Reagan telling us how he's going to cover up the debt with federalism. One fine day, they'll give the mayors, everyone that's toughest to govern, deviate men and welfare mothers and junkies, endless problems that'll drain our cities, precious dollars, down to the depths of degradation, insolvency. Friends, an idle tax is a big temptation. Trouble.
Trouble.
In everybody's city.
In everybody's city.
With a capital T, and that rhymes with D, and that stands for dough.
That stands for dough.
We've surely got trouble.
We've surely got trouble.
In every kind of city.
That's right.
Right now, it's goodbye federal aid and the old cash flow.
Downtown,
we got trouble. And it's surely not scrubbable trouble. That fancy Reagan welfare swap is a real low blow.
Real low blow.
Oh, yes, we got trouble. Double trouble.
Oh,
yes, we got trouble.
With a T.
Got to rhyme it with D.
Rhyme it with D.
And that stands for D.
proprietor of this disreputable house now makes his tardy appearance, but unfortunately, Tip O'Neill is not alone. These ladies, if that is the right word, occupy the upstairs room.
To blow the people's money all day long, but now to him we sing this song.
Hey, Daddy, I want some welfare dough, T-bone steaks to go.
The nation, it's worse than liberation.
It's cramping our vocation.
Daddy, we need a Cadillac to haul our cheesecake back. Daddy, you used to get the best
just one moment longer. There is a tall stranger from the Tombstone Territory who is ready to give this skit a hasty burial.
That's Mighty Mo Udall, the congressman from Arizona. This turkey ran for president and got beat by an even bigger gobbler named Jimmy Carter.
What? Nobody could have lost to Jimmy Carter. What's Mo doing these days?
He helps little creatures, and he tells jokes.
I used to sling liberal slogans to the voters as I'd swing from New Hampshire to Dakota when I'd run. in my presidential races, and I'd see such surly faces when I'd take them through my paces, made me frown. Thought they'd run me out of town if all those down-home folks could know. I'm a Humphrey Hawkin', liberal talkin', son of a gun from Arizona, left-wing cowboy mo. But now I'm smart. Humor does it so much better, and I start telling jokes about the weather. Lots of jokes with an easy kind of banter while I'm winning in a canter. No one thinks that I'm a slatter. I can win with this new light-hearted spin because it hides that down below. I'm a seething, breathing, gay, deceiving, liberal lip from Arizona, left-wing cowboy mole. So my advice to all you guys who would be winners is precise. Tell your jokes and eat your dinners. Furthermore, never talk about the issues, 'cause they'll tear your speech to tissues, and they'll surely make you wish you'd stuck to jokes. Just those funny anecdotes, and never let your message show. Be that anti-feudal, use your noodle, son of a gun called Morris Udall, left-wing cowboy, strictly middle brow boy, laughing cowboy mo.
Jokes, just those funny anecdotes, and never let your message show. Be that anti-feudal, use your noodle, son of a gun called Morris Udall, left-wing cowboy,
strictly middle brow boy,
laughing cowboy.
Ladies and gentlemen, the president of the Gridiron Club has the great privilege of selecting the speakers to respond for the respective parties. And this year, the president of the Gridiron Club has invited two people he loves very, very much. And the first of these, and none too soon, and strangely enough, from Arizona, is an old friend and a good news source, Congressman Morris K. Udall.
Fellow taxpayers, nattering nabobs of negativism, I thought I saw several down there tonight. Former friends of David Stockman, a very large group, liberals and Americans, Secretary Watt, and George Will's vocabulary teacher, where the hell ever you may be out there. I want to welcome especially my friends from the Audubon Society and other subversives who are probably at their table tonight. We had an actual sighting of a duck-billed, pinko, red-breasted flamingo right here in Washington in front of the Audubon Society. I noticed, Mr. President, this seven-piece orchestra back there doing a miserable job on ragtime cowboy mo and all of that stuff. That's really trying to show you what the National Symphony is going to look like when Stockman gets through these budget cuts. Proud in Arizona of Ben Cole, who's risen through the ranks of mediocrity, Kilpatrick and Rowan and all of these guys. To become president, and any guy who can get Udall and Goldwater on the same platform has got to have something going for him. I understand it's a great honor, Barry, for you and I to be here. It's somewhere between returning a Pulitzer Prize and lunch at the Libyan embassy. Figure out why in the heck they had picked me for this great honor tonight, but I suddenly decided after listening to these lousy skits, I feel like Mayor Daley. They have vilified us. They have castigated us. Yes, they have even criticized us. But I think I was picked because Barry Goldwater and I down here, you know, the way we've acted in presidential campaigns, we have made Arizona the only one of the 50 states where mothers don't tell little kids they can grow up and be president. Now, I was up in New Hampshire. I tell the story. House members don't run for president. That's part of the game. But if you come to Washington as a Republican senator, or a Democratic senator, the day you arrive, you are presumed to be a presidential candidate if you're under 65 and not under indictment, detoxification, or living in sin. But congressmen don't run in any way I did in 76, and you don't know how humiliating it is. They tell me about 15 straight defeats by Jimmy Carter. How in the hell do you like to have that on your record? But I went to New Hampshire. Guy from a little town in northern Arizona, and we had the television cameras. We got in the car immediately after my announcement to get to 15 or 5 towns before dark to show how much support we had in the first little town. Car got stuck in the snow in the parking lot, and the woman driving said, "We'll get it out, Mo. We want you to go over while we're doing that and put your head in that barber shop. That old man, mouth goes all the time, and he's very influential." I put my head in. I was kind of embarrassed and timid. I had only been a presidential candidate's an hour and a half, and I was 3,000 miles from home. All these old guys sitting around, I said, "Sir, Mo Udall from Arizona running for president." He said, "Yeah, we know. We were laughing about it this morning." But I was reading Human Events the other day, and I wrote up a few anecdotes on 3x5 cards. One of them with vodka, and they beat me to that one. But nobody wants to hear about those anecdotes except maybe Bob Packwood, and I didn't see him here tonight. So I'll move on. I would like to make a special recognition and welcome tonight to the President's Chief Foreign Policy Advisor, but I don't know who the hell it is, so I'll pass that one through. Talk about Jimmy Carter's hometown in Plains, Georgia. Hell, Barry knows in St. John's, Arizona, it's so small you can't even lust in your heart. And they've got the entering and leaving signs on the same post, so. But you know, we've had all of this talk for 14 months now about the great communicator and how important it is to communicate. I think the Republicans have always had great communicators, and they haven't been recognized. They've had a variety of them and a lot of superstars. Surely the late Nelson Rockefeller should have made the Communicators Hall of Fame in Dixon, Illinois, I think it is, for that time when he gave the finger to those protesters at Syracuse University. Summing up all the frustration of those of us in public office in one gesture. But that great moment deserves Hall of Fame attention, I think. But I learned later that he was not trying to make an obscene gesture, Nelson. He was trying to show them how you turn the folks down for a loan at the Chase Manhattan Bank. You know, sir, the loan committee has considered your application, and here is our answer. And in Arizona, in the fullness of time, we raised up another great communicator by by the name of Barry Goldwater, who you'll never forget, said in case of nuclear war, the first thing is to circle the wagons. You remember that? Barry is often wrong, but never in doubt. He can get to the blunt heart of a problem as quick as anyone I know. You remember when Judge O'Connor had been nominated and Reverend Falwell said that every good Christian ought to be concerned about this nomination? I asked Goldwater at the airport what he thought about that. He said, I think every good Christian should kick Reverend Falwell right in the posterior. And I told him wasn't going to work because Falwell was a practicing Christian and would turn the other cheek. Go ahead, I like this here. But Judge O'Connor is doing a great job over there. She put on the robe and she's gone to work. Somebody was asking the other day the difference between the Supreme Court and the Ku Klux Klan.